Our tech stuff is still considered fairly pedestrian, you know, in our industry, but that's what makes it so exciting an opportunity. So we see a lot of tech guys and business guys coming into the cannabis space and just being able to be like, you know, because they've seen it before. They know what's going on, and it's just a simple analogy. So you see a lot of marriages between tech and business in the cannabis space that are creating some amazing breakthroughs and developments.
Welcome to the Hacker Noon Podcast. I'm your host, Trent Lipinski. In this episode, I interview Alex Rogers. He's the CEO and founder of ICBC, the International Cannabis Business Conference. In this episode, we discuss the cannabis industry and what's happening with legalization and regulations. We also discuss internationally what's happening around the world and how cannabis is moving out of prohibition. If you're interested in learning more about the investment opportunities and how the tech industry relates to cannabis, this is an amazing episode, so stay tuned.
Harbor is transforming private investing with blockchain technology. Through the Harbor platform, investors can access institutional quality assets like commercial real estate, investment funds, equity in private companies, and more. Own a piece of an office building, equity in a hotel, or invest in a venture capital fund. Harbor's platform allows qualified investors to access opportunities previously out of reach through lower investment minimums and without locking up their capital for 5 to 10 years. Restrictions apply, so visit harbor.com for more information. That's harbor.com.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Trent Lipinski. I'm here with Alex. Hey, Alex, tell us a bit about who you are and what you're working on.
I am the CEO of the International Cannabis Business Conference and founder, and our mission is to bring the cannabis industry and the legalization of cannabis all over the world. And we are doing that in that we're holding conferences now in the United States, Canada, Germany, Spain, and Switzerland.
And you've got quite the background in this industry. Can you tell us a bit about some of the stuff you've worked on? And you've got quite an interesting past that seems to date back all the way to the 90s.
Yeah. So the grandfather of cannabis is a man named Jack Hare. He wrote a pretty famous book called The Emperor Wears No Clothes. And I met him in 1993 in Santa Cruz. I'm from Minneapolis, but I moved out to Santa Cruz. My girlfriend was a junior transfer at Santa Cruz, California. And I was fresh off the boat from Minnesota and met Jack Hare. And he recruited me to be one. And I was a fan of smoking pot. And so I didn't know about activism then, but I sure knew about pot. And I knew we had a lot of brown pot in Minnesota, and I knew there was a lot of green pot in California, and it cost more, but it was a lot better. And so I met Jack Hare, and I was a Minnesota boy. I come to California, I see kind of this apathetic, I'm not really a hippie, but I have hippie tendencies. I like to hang out with the hippies. Like I said, they had a good green bud, and that the apathy killed me. Like, man, I just want to legalize weed, and we just got this. I was like, let's do it. And so I was fortunate enough to meet Jack, one of his really hardcore signature gatherers, Mike Jay from Santa Cruz, introduced us, and Jack kind of saw my potential and kind of nurtured me right away. And so I started doing activism, street activism. He had something called the California Hemp Initiative, and this was to treat pot like tomatoes. It was really progressive, some might say radical. And we were out in the streets coordinating a signature drive, this volunteer signature drive, to get signatures for something that we were never going to achieve. And everyone kind of knew it, but we still did it anyway. And it was fun. And by working with Jack, I started working with Cypress Hill and Normal and Debbie Goldsberry from Cannabis Action Network. Ed Rosenthal, the famous author for Growing Cannabis, Dennis Perrone, the godfather of medical marijuana. So I have all this experience in California working in cannabis activism, but this was before 215, before they legalized in 96 for medical. And then, I never really, I loved what I did, but I kind of wanted to do something else. So eventually I moved to Europe for about 10 years and did all sorts of things over in Europe for about 10 years.
And you got in a little bit of trouble in Europe. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I did. Well, I was over there, you know, and I was just, all I was doing is chasing girls and learning languages. I mean, really, I was just like the typical young goofball guy. And I did have a job. I worked for High Times. I ran the Milky Way concert house for the High Times Cannabis Cup every November. Mm-hmm. I did that from like 98 to 2003. And that's what I told everyone I did. But that was only like 2 weeks a year. I made like $1,500. But it was a cool position. I had a lot of power. I kind of got other jobs from that. I got girls' phone numbers. You know, I worked it hard those couple weeks. But I was selling weed to get by in Europe. You know, in hindsight, I look at myself as a complete fool. I don't know what I was thinking. You know, I'm 47 now. I was 26 then. I guess age and you know, and wisdom can do that to someone. But but anyway, I was selling weed, and eventually I got caught. And I'd actually stopped selling the weed when I got caught. It had been like a year and a half, and I had literally said, okay, no more of this. I'm going to take my life a different direction. And I did. I was a singer in Slovenia, and that was awesome. I was having a great life. I had a hot Slovenian girlfriend who's now my wife, and I was making about 200 euros €100 a week, maybe, right? Nothing, right? And I was just happy as a clam. And then my wife and I, we went back to the States. We got married. We came back because we were living in Slovenia, and I planned to live in Slovenia pretty much forever. And then I got pulled off the plane on an international Hauptbefehl. So that's an international warrant. And I was taken into custody in Austria for about a month, and then extradited to Germany, and I did about 6 months then in German prison, and then I got out at my trial, and that was a big moment for me. You know, I'm an upper middle class kid from Minnesota. My sister went to Princeton, and I went to prison, right? So
for selling a plant.
True, but I knew what I was doing was wrong, and I shouldn't have done it. I didn't do anything. It wasn't anything that was morally reprehensible, but it was stupid. And it was in Bavaria, like the most conservative place to sell weed. Everyone told me, oh, don't sell it in Bavaria. That's the Texas of Germany. And I was just like, it doesn't seem like Texas to me. But in fact, it kind of was, and in some regards. And
so let's fast forward here. It's 2019 now. That happened. And, you know, cannabis is completely legal in the state of California. The Trump administration just passed a farm bill, which actually completely legalized and rescheduled hemp and CBD in the entire country. So hemp is now legal. And you're now, what, four and a half years into running the International Cannabis Business Conference? So, you know, you've come a long way from your roots to where we're at today. And then the industry's come an equally long way. And can you touch on some of the things I just brought up? Like, what is going on with this industry? What, you know, this is a lot of change really quickly here.
Yeah, I mean, we're at the point where it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. We've been at that point for a while in terms of legalization. Now we have issues where we need to federally legalize. A lot of Canada's way ahead of us on this, in that they federally legalize, therefore they have a lot more mobility, and their industry is even that much more nascent. We have pods. Our industries are respective of each state, so you can't take cannabis out of state lines. Everything has to be vertically consolidated within that state. If you have a brand in Colorado and you want to have a brand in California, you have to then vertically consolidate in that state, have it grown there, processed and sold in that state. So you can't have like a big warehouse in Wyoming and then ship across the country to your respective dispensaries. You know, that doesn't work. So it's still pretty cumbersome, right? We've come a long way. It's still cumbersome, but now that's all falling with tax for 280E, you know, being able to write off your cost of your normal cost of doing business. That's very pro, that's, uh, they're, there's a lot of restrictions on that. And then there's banking. You know, you can't bank. You have to be a cash business, all this stuff. So when something like the hemp bill passes, then it's a huge step for you know, basically just normal cannabis commerce in America. We have it in these little bastions, under different auspices. You know, each state has their different regulatory guidelines, but we need to have it needs to be federally legalized. And when that happens, then it's going to explode, because what's happening now is the whole world is catching up to America. Or right now, America is, you know, the international cannabis space has been circumventing the U.S. in that they have these federal legal systems that, for example, Canada's federally legal, Germany's federally legal under medical auspices. And so Canada was exporting Buku Bud to Germany right now to supply German medical patients. Mm-hmm. There's a huge CBD rush in Europe, and there's a huge medical move in Europe where they're growing a lot in the south. They're supplying to the north. There's a lot of big hemp grows in Europe happening right now. There's a lot of private equity plays. There's a lot of the public corporations in Canada are buying up a lot of the European startups. This is also happening in Israel, Australia, Jamaica, Colombia. So all these countries are getting on board, and therefore it's only a matter of time before America gets on board too. But everything's going forward. If anything, it's three steps forward, two steps back, but the trajectory is clear, going up.
Harbor is transforming private investing with blockchain technology. Through the Harbor platform, investors can access institutional quality assets like commercial real estate, investment funds, equity in private companies, and more. Own a piece of an office building, equity in a hotel, or invest in a venture capital fund. Harbor's platform allows qualified investors to access opportunities previously out of reach through lower investment minimums and without locking up their capital for 5 to 10 years. Restrictions apply, so visit harbor.com for more information. That's harbor.com.
And in California, you know, we've kind of had to face, you know, legalization here, which it's been kind of confusing. You know, as a consumer myself, I use CBD products for health issues that I faced. And, you know, a lot of the brands barely survived legalization here because it was really more about regulation than it was legalization. And, you know, the industry is definitely facing some challenges, even with legalization. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. You know, I kind of look at things from a consumer's perspective. I try to look at things from a consumer's perspective because I'm an old school activist. So all I really want is to get the best product for the best price. And I don't care who makes it, you know, and the best product might be some boutique brand, you know, and some of those brands are suffering because they're not able to scale. Like this big money, private equity money that's been coming into the game for a while now. And also there's a lot of prohibitive regulatory requirements that make it, you know, you need to take a risk. It's a real business now. You've got to put in $500,000 and hope you're going to get that back out. That's a shame. I mean, I always support mom and pop businesses. I'm kind of libertarian minded. I think everyone should have a fair shake. If you look in Oregon, everyone really does have a fair shake. But at the same time, it doesn't matter because the folks that are going to scale are going to scale. Prices are going to drop and it's pushing people out where it's not viable. Mm-hmm. So I say a few things on that. For those brands that may not make it, they've got to brand more. They've got to market more because it's all about added value product and branding at that point. Like just like any business, you know, because everyone there's a glut. There's so much of it, right? But as an activist perspective, I would say there's basically, you know, the regulators are going to mess things up. You know, the cannabis is the redheaded stepchild, and there's so much money involved that everybody wants a piece. So the state gets a tax, the locals get a tax, fees, all this stuff that is. You know, just bad for business in general. No other business really has this type of, I wouldn't say punitive, but I would say prohibitive structure around it, or very few, you know, maybe like nuclear waste or something. I don't know. But, you know, it's kind of a, you know, and the idea is to stop prohibition. And so when it's more expensive at the dispensary, than it is on the street, then you're going to go, then people are still going to go to the street. That being said, we've seen prices go up in the dispensaries always when a state legalizes, and then bam, they go down because more people, the competition, more people growing. So ultimately it levels itself out. It will in California also. And you'll have, so now in Oregon, you can go get an ounce for $60 on a special of dank, like sick herb, right? That would have been back in Santa Cruz in 93 would have been $400, $300 and a quarter, like for the bro price or whatever, right? Yeah. And so prices are going down. The quality is good in Oregon. And yeah, some people are getting pushed out. But a lot of those people getting pushed out, were the reason they were making money anyway was on the backs of prohibitions, because people were still going to jail for this. So for example, when I'm in Berlin, the first conference we did in Berlin, I told everyone, I said, your regulators and politicians and administrators are gonna fuck this up. And that's clear. So what's most important is that we end criminal penalties towards cannabis, and that everybody should be able to have a robust home garden. So if everyone can have a home garden in the world, and the criminal penalties are ended towards cannabis, if I sell you a pound, the crime isn't the cannabis. The crime is that I didn't pay the tax on the pound that I sold you, right? And that's always going to be a crime. So we take it back to these kind of fundamental public policy axioms that everyone can be happy. The hippies can be happy because there's no criminal penalties and they can grow at home. And the big business guys can be happy, and then they can just treat cannabis as any other commodity.
Yeah. And just for some context for the listeners, you know, some of the regulations and some of the things in California, for example, it includes packaging. You have to have the most insane, wasteful packaging I've ever seen in any industry, where it's not just like child safety proof, it's like adult proof. You're like trying to get in there with scissors and a knife and trying to figure out how to actually get into these ridiculous zip tie bags. And, you know, it's pretty crazy. Then you've also got a lot of challenges when it comes to advertising, because although the states have legalized, and as you mentioned, the banks have not, the advertising platforms that pretty much everyone uses, from Google to Facebook, they also don't allow advertising for cannabis brands. So the normal avenues that are available for, you know, a alcohol company, for example, for advertising, I mean, they can run a Super Bowl commercial. You know, the same kind of advertising capabilities are not yet available to the cannabis industry. And now there's, you know, kind of this gray zone and question mark, even with hemp and CBD, you know, can you now market hemp and CBD products because it's now federally legal? You know, Facebook and Google haven't really quite said like, hey, we're going to allow this yet, even though federally now hemp and CBD are legal. So it's kind of a shit show. There's a lot of chaos going on in this industry. So, you know, tell us a bit about the event you're working on and how you're trying to kind of organize people to get through this and figure it out.
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, it is a shit show. And I think, that being said, I think any new business has its, you know, challenges and its hurdles. And so, you know, and I'm not justifying Facebook and Google not allowing for cannabis advertising, because I think that is the most insipid, just sorry ass way to be doing business. I mean, we consider these institutions as, some people do, as liberal bastions, right? Or as free as vessels of free thought, right? Mm-hmm. And expression. And it's just in the cannabis industry, as you get denied by Facebook, or the Facebook overloads all the time when you submit some ad, even we do as an ancillary get denied sometimes. And it's crazy. When I open a bank account with my ancillary, are you in the cannabis industry? Yes. Oh, we can't. Oh, but I don't sell weed. Doesn't matter. You know, it's like, I can understand a smaller institution. I can even understand a bigger institution like Facebook or Google doing it. But you know, it's weed, man. And this is like, it's so crazy that, you know, I don't know. I just think stoners are still looked down upon, like all those pot smokers, they're lazy, they're apathetic, they complain a lot. You know, we're not, you know, I don't know. All that stuff is still cocaine culture. Cause if you're going to get a lot of people who get that much work done are just on amphetamines, whether it's prescribed Adderall or whatever, you know? So those aren't cannabis vibes. I'm personally not drug prejudiced. I just don't want people to be drug prejudiced against cannabis also, you know? I think all drugs should be legal. But here's the deal. None of that matters. The business is crazy. This is a multi-billion dollar industry. At my conferences, hundreds of millions of dollars gets done on the table. It's insane. So it doesn't matter. We talk about, you know, investment, international investment, different private equity to investment banking to public corporations. We talk a lot about, you know, there's a lot of patent stuff with the new tech stuff coming out. There's a lot of people that are, there's so many new tech innovations in cannabis right now that all this, you know, IP is king in the cannabis world right now. And if you've got your IP in line and you've got something, you know, good to back it up with, then there are acquisitions happening in this industry like crazy.
No, it's a huge investment opportunity right now. That's for sure. Well, anyways,
it's not just the United States, if I could say. That's the whole thing. That's what I've tapped in on. I saw it years ago. You know, when I booked my first event in Berlin, everyone was like, Alex, what are you doing? This is international. You know, there's no international cannabis business. I was like, yeah. The Germans were like, oh, Alex, we are so worried for you. $500 a ticket. This is, we are worried for you. How do you say German are a very günstig, frugal people? You know, and I'm like, yeah, I'm scared too. You know, I don't know. You know, I just have this vision. And just like I said, what happened? All of a sudden, it wasn't all about America. It was about Canada. It was about Germany. It was about the Czech Republic. It was about Spain. It was about Colombia. It was about Jamaica. It was about Australia. It was about Israel. It was about South Africa. You know, all these countries. It was about Great Britain. It was all these countries, Greece, all these countries now. So it used to be that America was the only place, or the U.S. was the only place that had cannabis legal. Canada, too, right? Now that's not true anymore. So a lot of this, the business is, you know, there are no restrictions. The in Germany, you know, if you have a clear license and you want to do cannabis business or business or an importer license, import export. It's all, if as long as it's done under medical auspices, it's all cool. So I mean, I just think that can't be understated. Is how America is obviously not the center of the world, and we are like maybe with soft culture, but there's a whole world outside of America. And I was lucky enough to predict that would happen. And that was only three and a half, four years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because our first international conferences were in America, right? And then we just wanted to be international. And then we became international. And, you know, cannabis years are like dog years. You know, 1 year in the cannabis industry is like 10 years. You know, so much stuff can happen.
I think the tech industry can probably relate to that sentiment.
Yeah. Well, no, it's very analogous to the tech industry, and you see it right now happening, and just in terms of like company valuations or whatever, not just like the logistics or dynamics of the industry, but just like how everything is playing out. It's very techy, dot-com-y, like boom, in just how. Just how it was in the early, late 90s or early 2000s. And then we have the new tech boom, you know, and it's so similar. So there's actually a lot of tech folks, you know, our show in San Francisco attracts a lot, you know, definitely folks from Silicon Valley. And, you know, we're still, our tech stuff is still considered fairly pedestrian, you know, in our industry. But that's what makes it so exciting, an opportunity. And so we see a lot of tech guys, a lot of cannabis business, or just tech guys and business guys coming in the cannabis space and just being able to be like, oh, you know, because they've seen it before. they know what's going on, and it's just a simple analogy. And so you see a lot of marriages between tech and business in the cannabis space that are creating some amazing new breakthroughs and developments.
Well, I got to ask, you know, this is the Hacker Noon podcast. So what is some time in your life that you've had to hack something?
Let's see. I've had to hack something about a million. I'm not a computer guy, but metaphorically speaking, I've done it. That's been my whole life. There's a million times. I'd probably say in Amsterdam at a cannabis cup once, Fishbone was playing, and a famous old school band, Crucial, they're legends, and their last song was some real funky, groovy bit. And they invited the Cottonmouth Kings on. Cottonmouth Kings had opened up this rap group. They laid down this funky groove, and they said, okay, we're going to invite the Cottonmouth Kings. They're from Orange County, too, or they're our L.A. friends. Come on. The Cottonmouth Kings didn't come out. It was like they were like grooving on the Norwood, was grooving on the bass. Angelo was you know doing little sing, and they didn't come out, right? So me and my boy came out, and I rocked the whole Melkvig. Like, I had the whole 1,000 people there with Fishbone. And when we got off stage, Fishbone had done an amazing job. And I went and rocked it with some freestyle. And when we got off stage, that was their grand finale. They were all, like, saying what a good job I did. And I thought it was very ironic, funny, but, you know.
So you literally hacked a concert in the final song because the audience was unhappy that the other band wouldn't come out.
That's right.
That's awesome. Well, do you have any final thoughts before we wrap up?
Just that, like, kind of just reiterating that this is happening. This is going all worldwide, and it's only a matter of time. But I guess my final thought would be a little bit controversial, but I think Trump has been good and will be good for the cannabis industry. I think he's already been better, even though you had Jeff Sessions, saying all this hubbaloo about cannabis. When you look at who was getting busted by the feds and who was getting their doors busted in with machine guns, we don't see it like we saw it in Obama or Bush days. And part of that is not just Trump, it's the sign of the times, right? It's mm-hmm. the luxury of being president now. But still, it could go any way at any time. We could revert back into a police state when it comes to cannabis, right? And so my big prediction is that not only will Trump not legalize CBD and hemp, which he has, but that Trump will legalize cannabis federally in America, whether it's a roundabout way or directly, whether it's rescheduling, whether it's the States Act that's coming up, whether it's another thing. I think he's all for it, and I actually think Trump is good for the cannabis industry. So,
all right. Well, you heard it here first. So, let's see what happens. And you've got an event coming up in February in San Francisco, right? Can you tell us just a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's our fifth year in San Francisco. It'll be about 1,500 people there. It's at the Union Square Hilton, February 7th and 8th. VIP reception on the 7th, the 8th. We're going to be going, Lori Ajax, the cannabis czar of California, will be there after the final rules have just come out. And we have the Canadian Stock Exchange coming down to tell people how to go public, in American companies to go public in Canada. We have the big federal panel, actually, the Fed panel, the top lobbyist in Washington coming out to say what is going to happen with this administration, and we actually really do have a chance to legalize federally, and they're kind of spearheading the whole project. And then we got a great tech panel too, and then we got a party with DJ Domino from Hieroglyphics and DJ Muggs from Cypress Hill after party at Pier 23. And then we've got Barcelona, Berlin, Zurich, and Vancouver all this year, and the website is internationalcbc.com, internationalcbc.com. People can go to if they want more information.
Awesome. Well, thank you for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you, Trent. I really appreciate it.
This concludes another episode of the Hacker Noon podcast. I'm your host, Trent Lipinski. Please don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes and YouTube and follow us on social media. You can also find us at hackernoon.com. and podcast.hackernoon.com for more episodes. Thank you for listening.